I'd like now to welcome to the Radio Cafe George Jassel and Brooke Fuller. George and Brooke are co-writers of the film, and George is director of the film Little Dancer, which screens this Saturday night at the New Mexico History Museum at 7:15. It's part of the Santa Fe Film Festival and will be followed by a panel discussion. Welcome to the Radio Cafe.
Nice to be back in Santa Fe.
So this is a very beautifully made, deeply affecting film about a young ballerina from a small village in an unnamed country, presumably somewhere in Eastern Europe, who has the opportunity to audition for a dance academy in the big city. And it's a story set against a background of poverty and war and human trafficking. We aren't going to tell our listeners the whole story of the film because we don't want to give it away, because it's just
Good idea.
Fascinating story. But some of the themes in it, especially this theme that's in the background of human trafficking, are very, very important to talk about. How did you come to make this film and to work together on it?
You want to start?
Sure, I'll start. We actually initially wrote a different script, working on another project, which is set in a later time from this story. And as we were developing that, we became so fascinated by the evolution of our protagonist and how she had reached this stage in her life that we kept referencing it in our story over and over. And as time went on, we realized we had come up with a completely separate story. And so we took a trip to the country where we filmed this, Montenegro, and we drove the entire country from east to west, north to south, and it just started to come to life for us.
It's a, by the way, beautiful, beautiful place. There's land and water there that I'd never seen before and really couldn't place. I assume you chose it not only to tell the story, but just because it's incredibly beautiful.
Yeah, it was. We were looking for a location that was not depressing by any means, but it needed to be uplifting, to be a nice little backdrop. And I had received a tip-off from a filmmaker friend of mine in Vienna, and he said, well, why don't you check out Montenegro? It seems to be a great place. It seems to be perfect for your story. So Brooke and I hopped on a plane. We flew down to Montenegro, and we took a rental car, and we literally drove about 30 minutes in one direction and turned left for no reason whatsoever, and we stumbled across scene after scene, location after location. It was perfect, and we said, wow, this is amazing, you know, half an hour out of the plane, and the scene is here and that scene is there and there's props already. And it was fantastic because we had, like, for example, we had a scene that played on a local football pitch, and I said, Brooke, look here, this is where we could have our soccer scene, and it was a soccer ball there in the bushes. And In our story, we imagined that the girls needed to clean the sheep off the field ahead of the game, and there were the sheep just across the wall.
Yeah.
And it went on, and we turned left and we turned right. It was just totally fantastic. And then the magic of it, if you just imagine, was that after we found the location within half hour, we drove up and down the country just to make sure we didn't miss any other locations. We didn't find any. We literally ran into the locations that we wanted within the first hour.
Amazing.
So it was really like an... I said to Brooke, that's an indication from above.
Yes, this is the way to do it. Yeah, for sure.
True, no?
Yeah.
That's how it was, yeah.
So here you are, an American and an Austrian, making a film in Montenegro with a Ukrainian cast in Russian.
Yeah.
I mean, why Russian?
Well, to me, it was clear that the Santa character used to be a believable ballerina. In other words, a 15-year-old girl that really knew how to dance. So, and in our case, it was classic ballet, and we needed a classic ballet expert at 15 years old that looked the part, looked gorgeous and fantastic, and wasn't 17 or 19 or anything like that. And I started to cast on other jobs that I did as a commercial film director in Moscow and Kiev and Poland and Warsaw and in Czech Republic, all the hubs that you would normally think of producing great ballet dancers, young ballet dancers, and I've cast, I think, I'd say 500-600 people, and amongst the last that I cast was Tatiana, Stephanie Seymour, which is a coincidence because there is a Stephanie Seymour.
I know, it's very confusing on Internet Movie Database because you get this 40-year-old supermodel instead of this 15-year-old.
No. This is Stephanie Seymour. That is her name, her given name, out of Kyiv. And she is a ballerina, and she studies with the Ballet Academy in Kyiv. And she looked the part, and I wanted utmost authenticity. So I decided that everybody around her, because she wasn't English speaking or any other language, needed to be speaking in the same language. So I started to cast the rest of the cast in Kyiv. They were all Ukrainian. In the Ukraine, you speak Russian. Russian is the first language from the Soviet days. They do have Ukrainian language, but Russian is the language. And then we needed a crew. The crew needed to understand what the cast were saying. And so the crew started to be mostly Ukrainian. Then we mixed some Austrian people into it. And that's how that melange of different nations came about.
Now, how did the two of you come to work together?
Well, Brooke and I, well, Brooke.
Well, we were friends first here in Santa Fe. And I had been writing for a long time and looking to create a partnership with someone that we could move forward. And because it's really tough to just be a writer. There are so many of us out there, and you may have 10 scripts, but unless you're out there in Hollywood with an agent, you're not going anywhere. You can just, you know, tell all your friends here that you're a writer, and it doesn't mean anything. When I met George, I thought this is going to be a great opportunity, and we just clicked really well. And we actually started writing a script about what we knew, which is New Mexico. And so we wrote a version of a Santa Fe script, which we hope to make someday.
Yeah.
But in the meantime, we realized that, you know, again, it's the challenges you meet in the industry of, you know, how do you break in? George is a very successful commercial director, but as far as being a feature film director, that doesn't really carry a lot of weight. So we wanted to make a movie at all costs, and this was the way for us to have something, and hopefully we'll get some distribution coming out of the festival, and further projects will be put in place.
Well, it is the classic, beautifully made independent film, presumably shot for not a whole lot of money, is that right?
Yeah, it's for sure it's a shoestring budget, but we're not... I don't want to give away the price tag because it has nothing to do with the end result. The end result matters, and if it's good or not, whatever cost was incurred is the second question.
Well, and I think, I mean, to me, it's a movie, and I've looked at your commercial reel online, and of course, you're an amazing filmmaker and have shot all kinds of commercials for major companies, and they're so good. And so as I was watching this film, I was thinking, this is as well as a film that really everybody should see because it's such an important set of themes. It's also a film that filmmakers should see because the craft of it is so subtle, and there are ways that just simply the shot of, for example, a road, and that shot is held for an extra second or two, builds a kind of suspense in the mind of the viewer that you don't really know what's going to happen, but it's just very beautifully crafted.
Well, thank you very much for your kind words. For me, it's a personal adventure, really, because certain things happened and were brought to me in my life that made me aware of the issue of human trafficking. If I can tell you about that, it'd be
sincere. Well, let's do that because, again, it's part, in many ways, part of the film, even though we don't actually see very much, but it's there, and it's so important. How did this subject, which is, I think, terribly underreported in the media, come to your attention?
The first time I remember being pushed into that direction was when I saw a picture of a African child. I think the guy was about 8 or 9 years old, and people were looking for donators who would facilitate an operation, necessary operation on the guy's skin. He had what appeared to be a horrible skin disease on one half of the body. It looked like half elephant, half person. And I asked about the reasons why the guy looked like that, and they told me that he was supposed to be a child soldier, and he had refused to become a child soldier, so they put him on a griddle and they grilled the boy. And that was the first time when I got really sensitive to the abuse on children. And later on, as I told you and Brooke, as we talked about before, when I lived in Vienna, I had a brothel in the first floor of my house, which is a relative posh neighborhood.
There was
in
a
Vienna.
Brothel on the first floor of your house.
Yeah, there was. Yes, exactly. And a friend of mine came in from Los Angeles. He said, "George, oh, how cool! You have a brothel in your house." And I said, "Well, it's maybe not that cool because I just found out that there's a father with a daughter that is running the business, and the daughter, to my view, could have been maybe 14 or 15 years old. So it wasn't all that funny, really." And it made me think about how people perceive prostitution, how they perceive the whole area, what they think, and what it really is on the other side. And then during the German World Cup in 2006, they had a massive import of prostitutes to the games, and they set up trailer camps where they flushed people through on a green light, red light basis. People were walking into the trailer to have sex with the prostitutes, walked out on the other side. So was it like a traffic light, red, green, red, green, red, green, people going through. So all those things being brought together made me think, and I got sensitized to the issue, and I started to interview people, and I met people that were actually human trafficked out of Africa and other places, and I started to educate myself and read a lot and meet people and people that had done studies and so on, and that's how it came about.
And so people are brought from usually third world countries of one kind or another, whether it be Africa or Eastern Europe or wherever, to Western countries. And the way they're brought over and the way they're treated, they don't know at the beginning what they're getting into, but it's very brutal and it's very hard to get out.
Well, there's a mix, to be totally truthful, and that is really important to be totally truthful. You can't paint a rosy picture one way or the other. As a matter of fact, there is a large percentage of women who know what they're getting into, and they voluntarily do it. Of course, they're being told the nice aspects. You'll make a lot of money, and it will be not as bad, and then you'll return to your home with all the money and blah, 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 that kind of thing. And women probably persuade themselves that it's better to go that route instead of starving and instead of having a miserable life, and then they do it and they find themselves in a completely different set of circumstances. Many start using drugs and then it's a downhill road from there. But that's the most positive side of the business. The other one, it's a minority, but it exists, and it involves children, underage people. It involves people that are simply forced into human trafficking and prostitution. There's organ harvesting. There's anything you can think of. And what most viewers and listeners probably don't know, how large of a business it is. It's a gigantic business, and it almost rivals tourism right now. And it's a multi-billion dollar business. And a lot of people are making profits on the illegal side, and there's millions of victims on the other side.
It is pretty daunting, the idea that human trafficking is just about as big as tourism as a business. But of course it's not. It's run by often basically the equivalent of mafias.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I think what's really striking is that the world at large perceives human trafficking with as much of a blasé attitude as they do tourism. And I can remember back in 2006 when George called me from Vienna expressing an interest to work on this project. And he told me about the sex trailers in Berlin. And to me, I remember thinking, wow, it's like prostitution McNuggets, you know? Yeah. And it was the first time that I really confronted that lack of empathy that so many of us have for human suffering. And as I looked at it more and more, I felt that what I wanted to tell was a story that would make people have empathy. And I realized that by doing it in a sensationalist way is maybe not the best way to go about it, because we see so much sensationalism on screen and in other related media, that to do a different or to take a different path to create an empathy with a character, with someone that you like, as opposed to someone who's really cool and has guns and stuff like that, would be a much more effective way to get our message across. And I hope, if nothing else, we've really done that with this project.
Yes, indeed. I mean, it was a very affecting movie for me, and I'm looking forward to seeing it again. It raised for me the question of the way women, first of all, are stigmatized. So if a woman is taken into what is essentially slavery, if a woman is human trafficked against her will, or even if, like you say, a woman is trafficked and she's kind of signed up for it, those women are the lowest of the low in society, and we do not have, at least because there hasn't been the media, there haven't been the movies made, we don't really have an image of these people as human beings or people who are victims of a much larger system.
Right. We just see them as victims, pure and simple, and there's so much victimhood in all other aspects in the world, too, that I think there's only so much that an individual can take in and continue to have empathy. The rest we just block out, and, you know, we have our own lives to lead as well.
Or we see them as victims, or we see them as prostitutes and write that off.
That, too, which is even more sad.
Yeah, I think you need to get the full picture, including all the colors, including even the so-called evil guys having a background and having a backstory. It's not that clear-cut. You say, this is a good guy, this is the bad guy, and that's it. And then you walk away, you pose a judgment, you can go back to sleep. This is more involved and more complicated than that. Everybody's, in my opinion, everybody's fighting for survival one way or the other. And in the field of those places that we are talking about, where those stories are happened most of the time, this is even more so than in the West. People are fighting for survival, and I'd like to encourage an open view even to the lives of these criminal guys, why they do that, what their background looks like, because I believe if you get the full picture without judgment, you walk away with a willingness to help and support, as opposed to check it off and do something else. And I think, to me, that's very important, that we all, when we are exposed to the heavyset issues, that we walk away with something that we want to contribute or do, and not just know and discard.
Well, I think it's important, again, Americans are kind of trained to think in polarized ways, black and white, good guys, bad guys, mm-hmm. Democrats, Republican, whatever your polarity
is. No question.
Yeah. That's just the way we're brought up, unfortunately. And I think the best works of art and the best films are ones that do not put moral judgment on their characters, but let each one play out the life that he or she is given. And mm-hmm. this movie really does that.
We had a lot of moments when we were writing the scripts where we came to those forks in the road. And, you know, would we make someone, would we be evil? Would they commit an overtly evil deed? And, you know, our solution has, for the most part, to stay in the middle and to make it gray, because what George was talking about, without the easy casting of judgment, it makes for much more profound work, and I think something which makes a much bigger statement.
When you look at the whole problem of human trafficking and the incredible suffering, and you start to think of it as slavery, what does the liberation movement look like at this point in history?
I talked to other people who saw the movie, and I asked them that same question, what they felt, because that opinion was very important to me. And many people felt that they would want to educate their own kids to be open to the issue and to educate them to feel that boys and girls are equally worthy. Because even in our Western lives right now, girls do girly things and boys do boyish things, and that's how it has to be. And the girls move over and clean up the dishes, and the boys go and play football, something like that. All those role models are being imprinted, and I think it'd be important to be very open that girls and boys are equally important, and love is for free. You don't have to pay for it. You don't have to go and
buy open it. Your
yeah, exactly. It's not a good that's available on the market, so to speak, but it should be available to all of us. And I think this would breed a new attitude and a more open, more liberal society, and where those things are less necessary. And if we move in that direction where prostitution is less necessary because love is free and open for everybody and boys and girls are equally as important, I think that would be one way to go.
I think on the plus side, the recent election really cast a lot of light on this with the whole issues with the war on women. And I would like to think that this film is coming to the public at a time when the world is much more open to making this paradigm shift.
George Gisell and Brooke Fuller are co-writers of the film Little Dancer, which screens on Saturday night at 7:15 at the New Mexico History Museum. It's part of the Santa Fe Film Festival. It will be followed by a panel discussion. Thank you so much for being with us on the Radio Cafe.
Thank you so much.
And once again, the Santa Fe Film Festival is happening through Sunday, the 9th of December. You can find out more information at santafefilmfestival.com. And the locations are all fabulous. The Center for Contemporary Arts, the Lensic, the New Mexico History Museum, and the Screen. There are pocket guides all over town that you can find with the schedule. You can find it online. And you can also call for more information, 505-988-7414.